44 of season 12 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back once again, Heather.
Hello! Thank you for having me back once again. I am happy to be here.
Well, you might not say that when we're done with this episode, but for now.
Well, it's an awful scene, but it's always fun talking about anything with you. So have fun.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Always fun talking to you also. And there's a lot to talk about. There's no question about that.
Yes.
So minute 44 begins with Boggs questioning Andy and ends with Andy showing that he's an educated man. So we ended things yesterday with Boggs and at least two of his cohorts, maybe three, depending. We'll try and see if we can spot the fourth guy in this one or not. But I do believe that he has left the room, even though we didn't see him leave the room. But it could have been interpreted that he did leave the room at that point.
It looks like he might have left with the projectionist when he made him leave.
Correct. But we'll just have to wait and try and figure it out.
Yep.
All right. So basically the projectionist left the room and Boggs, Andy starts moving backwards and Boggs moves towards him and goes, "Ain't you going to scream?" Now, I mean, Boggs basically, you know, he lives for the fact that he's able to, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, take someone because they're fighting. You know, he doesn't want.
Yeah.
Because if he just wanted somebody who's just going to be agreeable and, you know, and he's got his three cohorts with him, you know, he doesn't need to fight Andy. He can, you know, have fun with Rooster and I think the other guy's name is Pete. If that's what he wants to do. But he doesn't. He's looking for, I don't know if the adventure is the right word for it, but he's looking for the challenge. That's what he's looking for.
Yeah, I would describe it as he seems like a guy who likes to play with his food.
Okay.
Before he eats. Yeah, I think he gets off on the terror that he incites. And thus far, he has incited quite a bit with Andy, and Andy's immediate reaction here is not what he is looking for, not what he anticipated. And also, I think it's that terror and that fear is a way for him to control. And that's what he doesn't have right now because he is not getting the reaction he wants from Andy. That's and right. Andy is many things, but he's not stupid.
No. But again,
he knows he can't win this fight.
That's right. And as we saw 2 weeks ago, you know, sometimes Andy would win, sometimes he wouldn't, and that's the way life went for Andy for 2 years, you know, in Shawshank. You know, that's just the way it was for him.
Yes.
For better, for worse, that type of thing. And
yeah, and I think that he also mistakes Andy's behavior for compliance, which I think is what Andy was banking on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And again, Andy has had 2 years to learn the methods of what these guys do in order to try and find a way to outsmart them.
Yes, and we've learned that he's patient, he's deliberate, he's intelligent. So, and I think at this point, too, there's got to be a level of frustration with this BS that he doesn't want to deal with anymore. And as we get further into the scene, I think we see that a little bit more, but there is a level of defiance that he hasn't shown before here. I think before it felt like there was more survival, him trying to just get through it. Here, he feels very calculated.
Right. That's true. And then Andy turns around and says, "Let's get this over with." You know, which completely shocks Boggs. He's not used to that.
No.
And these three guys start moving towards Andy. And then we see that Andy picks up one of the movie reels that's there and turns around and smacks Pete right in the face. And
Which is awesome.
then Rooster comes at him, and then he hits Rooster in the face also.
Oh, there are all four of them in there. I see it now. I paused the screen. All four of them are there. It's two of them are in the background, and two of them are holding Andy.
No, but that would mean that there's five.
Yeah, five total, but there's four guys. Yeah, there's two
You're
guys holding him.
ah no, you we have the guy who's guarding the door. That's the thing.
Yes. I thought he was guarding the outside of the door, which would make more sense,
Yes, I
actually.
think it would be.
Yeah, but he's there guarding it on the inside, apparently. Okay, I didn't notice that
Right,
before.
okay.
Just,
Nice catch.
yeah.
Nice catch. Now, how heavy do you think a movie reel is from the 1940s?
It's pretty heavy. Yeah, it's pretty heavy. It's gonna hurt. It's gonna take some effort to hit someone with it too, but blind rage and adrenaline can do a lot. And what's his face was not expecting it. That he had to have messed him up pretty good.
Sure. So what would you think?
Oh, how much it actually
Yeah.
weighs? I don't know. I'd say 10, 12 pounds, maybe more.
Okay, so we can't tell 100% if this is a standard reel or a double reel, but a standard reel weighed around 6 pounds. But again,
Okay, I was thinking more than a gallon of milk is what I was guessing, and a gallon of milk is about 8 pounds.
okay. And again, I mean, he's wielding it in a way which is going to cause a lot of the impact is going to be pretty heavy there also. And a double reel is around 12 pounds. Again, makes sense. Double
Okay.
the
Yeah.
a regular reel is about 1,000 feet, and the double reel is 2,000 feet. So that's the way they would do them at the time. So that's still a pretty big impact to hit a guy in the head and then another guy in the face with that whole thing.
Yeah.
And then
He knows that he's going to be on the losing end of this, but
he wants to go down
by behaving the way he's be. Yeah, well that and also it's going to throw them off because none of them are thinkers. None of them are quick on their feet. None of them they're all of them are clearly somewhat surprised by his
Correct.
behavior.
Correct. And we'll see the reaction
Which
also, which does something there. Oh, wait a second. He first
yes.
hits Boggs in the face, not Pete. Oh, I made a mistake. Okay, so
Oh, it
yeah, so he
is.
hits Boggs first and then he hits Rooster. So yeah, he's doing damage to Boggs also. And Rooster screams out, "He broke my fucking nose."
Yeah. What well, and that's the thing that happens, and I think this is the shift right here. There's a reversal of power that starts to happen
Correct.
that we haven't seen yet between them and him. And it's even more ridiculous because there's three, four of them, and there's just him. And he is not a violent, strong man at all, but he is smart.
And then both Pete and Rooster grab Andy, and Boggs moves forward and starts punching him and beating him, stuff like that. Again, it's sort of I understand on the one hand that he wants to punish Andy for what he just did, but if it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, that he wants someone who's going to be more docile, okay, who's not going to be docile, who he wants him to try and fight back. He wants to do it forcefully, but if you beat the guy unconscious or you hurt him so much, he's not going to be fighting back. So that sort of defeats that purpose from that perspective. But whatever, I'll never be able to understand
Yeah,
the
but
reasoning behind it.
he's not a think. That's because he's not thinking.
Right.
Yeah, he's not smart, he's not intelligent. He's not a man with a plan. He behaves on instinct or reacts to his emotions because he has no emotional intelligence
Right.
whatsoever.
Okay. That's fair.
His behavior is borderline animalistic. There isn't a lot of thought that goes into what he's
Okay.
doing. He's reacting to emotions that he doesn't know how to process. That's the way I see
Okay.
him
I think
in
that's
general, which is why Andy's able to maneuver through it a bit here, I think.
right. And then he punches Andy in the face, and Andy falls down to his knees, and both Pete and Rooster are holding him, and Boggs just keeps punching him. And you know, they reach the point where they're holding Andy very tightly that he can't get out. And then Boggs pulls a knife out from his shirt. And so it got me thinking about the whole idea of a shiv. You know, because that's the term used in prisons.
In the prison.
So what type of weapons are used as shivs? Like what would you think?
They use all sorts of stuff. They can use magazines, anything that toothbrushes that they can sit there and scale down. Almost anything can be used as a weapon if you're clever enough to manipulate it as such. But yeah, pretty much anything. If you could pull off a piece of your bed, if there's a piece of metal that's hanging there, or you find something that's hanging out broken on there outside by any of their athletic equipment or things like that. I mean, they're pretty resourceful. When there is a will, there is a way, and men seem to have a unique ability to find a way to commit violence.
True, that's very true. Even though I'm assuming in women's prisons they also have shivs, so but I'll give you that
Oh
one.
yeah, they do too.
Yeah.
Well, the
Now
majority of violent crimes in the world are committed by men, so
that's true. That's
it's
true.
not a leap and bound when it comes
No,
to that.
not at all, not at all. Now, what I find really, really funny is, I mean, when Bubba was on a few months ago, we talked about the fact that, when Andy and Red were having the original conversation, and he said, "Well, if you ask for a toothbrush, which is a non-lethal object, I would, I just quote your price." And we said back then, and you even just mentioned it right now, that a toothbrush could be used as a shiv. So it's very interesting that Red would say
Like
that
anything can be a weapon.
that's right. That's right. So I
Yeah.
basically looked up a list of materials that can be used to create shivs. So you could have metal items, you could have spoons, bed frames, nails, brackets, fencing wire that are sharpened against concrete, plastic objects, toothbrushes, combs, heavy-duty hangers, glass and ceramic. You have shards from mirrors, windows, light bulbs wrapped in cloths. You have razor blades that can be taken from disposable shavers that can be used on plastic pens and rulers and things like that. You also have scraps of construction wood, tightly rolled newspapers hardened with water, or using large splinters and things like that. So the part of the things that they do in correctional facilities to try to stop them using these type of things. So the type of materials that they allow them to use are somewhat considered preventative measures, meaning that they would give them flexible plastic toothbrushes or lightweight pens that were clear, things like that. They obviously have lots of inspections to try and catch things, and
Yes.
Certain material they would use that you like, for instance, they would have shatterproof mirrors and light fixtures that you couldn't get to, in order to try to get the glass from them and stuff like that. So yeah, I just thought just a very interesting way to look at the, because that's what they have in prisons and in movies. We get to see all of these improvised shivs.
Yeah, well, I mean, where, like I said, where there's a will, there's a way, and it does seem like no matter what, it's got to be almost it's got to be impossible to look and find all of it, and I mean, and you know, the lengths that they go to make them, to hide them, it happens. It just does.
Sure. So at this point, while Boggs is holding up the shiv, he basically says to Andy, "Now I'm going to open my fly, and you're going to swallow what I give you to swallow. Then you're going to swallow Rooster's. Since you done broke his nose, he ought to get something out of it, something to show for it." And I mean, it's it's very interesting the language they're using here.
Yeah.
You know, because you would think that even in the 1940s they wouldn't need to use
It's
euphemisms. They would say it outright.
well, they probably would. I think this is a writer taking liberty, and I also think
It's
the
rated R,
ratings of this could be
definitely.
very. What is it rated?
It's rated R.
Okay. But yeah. I don't know. I think it would change some of the dynamics of it if we started to get overly vulgar with
Okay.
it. I think we mentioned earlier, about the sexual parts of, like, Rita Hayworth and the timeline, and that there's the implication there. I think, and the way that language is used throughout the movie, I think that we're avoidant of him saying what we probably imagine that he would say, and how he would say it is probably what would actually come out of his mouth. I think this is just creative liberty
Exactly.
to maybe make it a little less grotesque, but we still all know exactly what he's suggesting, which is, well, and also it is, this is what I think in a certain it just really depends on who you talk to, because people would not say something like this is necessarily rape outright. It would be sexual assault as opposed to that. Whereas I think in most of these scenarios too, it would probably be more than likely that that's what would happen in the scene, especially because they are so enraged and angry. I don't think that they would want to do what he's suggesting they would do, which is
That's right.
oral sex, forced oral sex. But that also makes Andy's response, it this the way that this is set up gives Andy the opportunity to take control of the situation. Whereas if it was out and out rape, then he wouldn't really be able to strike any fear in them and take any control back in the situation.
Okay, but it.
So I think it's structured that way so we can have this moment
100%.
between them.
And Andy then responds to him and goes, "Anything you put in my mouth, you're going to lose." And Boggs turns to him and goes, "No, you don't understand. You do that, and I'll put all 8 inches of the steel in your ear." So Andy just looks at him and goes, "All right. But you should know that sudden serious brain injury causes the victim to break down hard. In fact, I hear the bite reflex is so strong, they have to pry the victim's jaws open with a crowbar." And the look on Boggs' face is priceless, I guess you can say. So let's break this down a little bit.
Yeah.
He says he's got an 8-inch blade. What do you think the legal limit of a knife is?
Oh, I would say it's much smaller. I've had to I always have at least one on me. I think in most cases it's pretty small. I think it's like 2 or 3 inches, but it really depends on where you're going. And in most cases, in public places, that you just can't take anything in anymore anyway. So I don't know. I would say 2 or 3 inches. 8 is a lot.
Yeah,
8's like a Bowie
that's
knife, which I
right.
have.
So basically, there's no federal law about the knife blade length in the U.S., and each state or
No.
local municipality makes their own laws about it. But the rule of thumb is that if the blade is under 3 inches, it's considered legal in most, if not all, jurisdictions.
That's what I thought.
So under 3 inches is legal, and you can even go into government buildings with them usually, or school grounds and things like that. 3 to 4 inches is legal to carry in most states, though some strict jurisdictions require open carry or prohibit these lengths in certain contexts. For instance, in Colorado, you can have up to 3.5 inches, and Massachusetts also has strict limitations. Then anything over 4 inches, they're classified as daggers or dirks, and there are certain states, like in Texas, that you can carry them in most places, but you can't take them into school zones or bars, things like that. And in California,
Yeah,
right,
which makes
100%.
sense.
And in California, if it's a folding knife, as long as it's folded, it doesn't matter. But if it's a fixed blade, then they have heavier restrictions on when it comes to air travel. So the TSA allows a non-locking folding knife with blades that are shorter than 2.36 inches in carry-on bags.
Really? I didn't know that. I just assumed it was a big no-no.
And if any other knife that you have has to be put in your checked luggage. Now, I think I've told this story in the past, but I once got flagged for carrying a pair of handcuffs in my carry-on. Again, I
Okay.
accidentally
I
had
want to know
no, I
all this.
I was playing around with a pair of handcuffs before I was going on a flight, and I just accidentally put them in my bag in my carry-on. Like I didn't even it wasn't something that I was planning on taking with me. And then, you know, I was it was when I was in high school. We were going to a basketball tournament, and you know, and this was back in the late 80s, so you know, long before 9/11, long before everything really was
Yeah.
got much crazier. And you know, we're waiting around while our luggage is going through the X-ray machine, and then someone goes, "Who's the Joker that brought a pair of handcuffs?" And then you know, I wasn't paying attention because they're not talking to me. And then I hear it again, "Who's the Joker who brought the pair of handcuffs?" And then I look over and they're picking up my bag, and I'm like, "Okay, I guess that was me." And they said, "Well, you can't take this on the plane." I said, "What are you concerned about? Am I gonna handcuff the pilot?" And she's like, "You better put it you better check this or I'm gonna take it." And so I had already checked my bag, and so I found someone who was in the group that hadn't checked their bag yet and put it in their bag and checked it. And whatever. I don't know why handcuffs would be technically illegal back in the late 80s to take on a plane, but oh well.
Yeah, I guess. I know. I've actually, well, and you know, you're from Michigan too. So a couple years ago, we went to Sault Ste. Marie and we were going to the locks. We had literally just checked into our hotel and then literally went directly there to go check it out. And you have to actually go through Homeland Security in order to go to one of the observational towers. I had my bag, which I carry all of my stuff. My 9-year-old has type 1 diabetes, so I have tons of that stuff in there, but I also had all my medicine and just traveling stuff in there. And like I just said, I always have a knife on me. I always do. I also collect them, different kinds. So I love swords and I love knives. So I always have at least one on me, but I usually check before going, like the air shows. I learned very young that I can't bring them into the air shows. Same thing, just had one on me, and they were like, no, you can't bring this in. So I'd walk all the way back to my car and put it back. But I hadn't considered it, so I hadn't gone through my bag and checked which knives I had in there, if I had any at all. And they searched my bag, and I was like, the woman asked me, she's like, do you have anything in here? Like, do you have any kind of, you know, contraband? Do you have drugs or weapons? And my brain to mouth doesn't have a huge filter. And I was like, I don't know.
Okay.
So she went through it and looked through it. And like I said, it was full. It's just like one of those like small, like kind of like a purse backpack type thing. And she's going through it and she's like, okay, you're good. And I'm like, yay. And then as we got, everything was fine. We go back to the hotel hours later and I start dumping all my stuff out. I had two knives in there that she
Oh,
didn't find. One was just a little pocket knife. I think I actually have it right
wow.
here. Yeah, this one. Just this little one right here. It's a folding knife. And then I had another one that's this lovely ornamental one that my dad got me years and years ago that I just keep because it's pretty. Yeah, she didn't notice either of them. So I don't know what that says about me. And I also don't know what that says about Homeland Security there. But we weren't doing anything. We were just going to the observational towers to watch the locks, which are awesome, by the way. If you haven't been there and you're in Michigan,
I don't
definitely go
carry a
check
knife.
them out at some point. Yes. Well, I have guns too. Rob just showed me his hand gun. Yes, I have those too, but I don't, and Michigan is an open carry, so I can, but
Is
I don't
Israel
usually.
is
I
open
don't
carry also,
often.
for obvious reasons. The only places, the only places I cannot
Yes.
take my gun is into the airport, and in there are certain, like, I guess, government buildings that you also can't take it in. But other than that, you can take them anywhere.
So yeah, I just thought it was hilarious because it's just so normal for me to have at least some kind of weapon on me at all time that I just didn't even consider it. But I was panicking when she was going through it because I had no idea. I'm like, I'm gonna be in trouble because this is Homeland Security. This is only like a couple years ago too. This isn't pre-9/11. Things are very different now. And like Rob said, they were very different back in the 80s and 90s. So yeah, I was really relieved that she didn't find either
Aren't you
of
lucky?
my knives.
Because then we would be then we would be
So
having this
lucky.
conversation with you in Shawshank.
I've tried
Okay.
to follow the rules. I am a good,
I am
responsible
very happy
weapons
for you.
owner.
Yes,
I was raised
ditto
right.
for me. Okay, so now the second question is that I now another question I have for you is it true what Andy is saying about about if someone gets a sudden serious brain injury, will it cause the victim to bite down hard?
I don't know if it's true, but it sounds like it probably is. It makes sense.
And it is true. Brain trauma can cause jaw locking. So impacts like whiplash or a blow to the head often strain or displace the TMJ, the temporomandibular joint. I didn't pronounce that right, but whatever. Yes, and it
We know
can
what you mean.
cause the jaw to lock. And so it's interesting that I don't know if back in 1949 people really knew that at the time. Andy is right.
He's smart, so it's very possible he somehow had this information and knew it. Like you said, it's probably not common knowledge amongst people, but it's possible he knew. It's also possible that he used a little bit of common sense and it sounded like it made sense. Like it did to me. I didn't question it. I'm like, yeah, that I would
Right.
assume
I
that
mean,
that's true. I don't feel compelled to go look
that's
it
right.
up. It seems true
The one
enough.
thing that they do exaggerate here is you don't necessarily need a crowbar
So
to
he.
open it up, but still, you don't want anyone getting their jaw locked in that type of situation. Let's put it that way.
No, and he definitely went to the melodrama with it, but he's dealing with idiots that aren't going to know any better anyway, and he's inciting fear in them with the way that he knows
That's
how.
right.
He's fighting with his brains.
That's
They
correct.
fight with their bodies.
And as Andy threatens them by showing his mental prowess, that's how this minute ends.
I love watching the shift in what's his face's face. He's sitting there and he looks absolutely terrifying because he's so excited that he's going to let Andy have it. And that moment where he's like, oh, that shift where he's like, this is not going the way I wanted it to. And also, I don't want to
That's
lose
right.
my junk. I love that. It turns a terrifying scene into a little bit. I mean, we're still worried about Andy, obviously, but it definitely shifts the debasement part
That's
of the
right.
scene that was about to happen.
Yeah,
And it does
completely.
shift the power.
Yeah, I like the way that they do that. All right, so today's segment is called Andy Do Thursday. Where my guests will give their top five Tim Robbins performances. So, once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
I was never a huge Tim Robbins fan ever, but I was surprised. I was like, I'm gonna go back and go through his IMDb and, see if I forgot about some movie or performance that maybe because I when I did my own list, it was relatively short. And he hasn't been in as many movies as I would have thought, like especially as long as he's been acting. That's not a bad thing. I just was kind of surprised by that. So I didn't have to change my list at all. My number five was Jacob's Ladder, which is an insane movie. And I saw it when I was way too young and should have never seen it. And that's another one that I kind of want to go back and rewatch and see if I feel the same way about. Number four is a movie that I probably shouldn't have seen as a young person, which is one of the ones that he's probably best known for. And that's Bull Durham, which is fun. And I remember enjoying it quite a bit. Also, one I haven't revisited in a very long time. My number three is one that I think is so much fun and is so underrated and underappreciated, and people do not talk about. And that is Nothing to Lose with Martin Lawrence. It is a really fun movie and it is hilarious. Tim Robbins is also hysterical in it. Great movie. Number two is Mystic River. Fantastic movie. Fantastic movie. Absolutely brilliant. Wonderful performances in it. Great writing. And I love mysteries too. So, and number one is quite obviously Shawshank. So once again, I was kind of a foregone conclusion, but nothing to lose, everyone. Nothing to lose. Go back. I think that was like late 80s, early 2000s. But yeah, late 90s. Late 90s. It was late 90s.
I'm trying to remember
It was a
if
fun
I've
one.
seen that. It sounds familiar.
It's one of those movies. Yeah, it's one of those movies where like the premise is Tim Robbins' character is neurotic, which I don't usually do well with characters with heavy neurosis. I'm very, 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 very specific about it. They tend to ignite my own neurosis. Everything's going wrong for him, and at some point, hence the title, he succumbs to it and it kind of frees him. And Martin Lawrence is the chaos demon in it. And I don't want to give anything away.
Okay,
I
I
just
have seen
want you
that.
all to go watch it. And every time I think about it, I'm like, I should go rewatch it. Yeah, it's funny. It's a good time. It's not going to change your life, but it's an enjoyable movie. And it's very much so a product of its time too. Martin Lawrence was fun back then. Another good Martin Lawrence one that people don't talk about is Blue Streak. I love that one.
Yeah,
That was fun.
that's a fun movie. Isn't there is he in the one with the
But he and Tim Robbins
Was
had
he
good
in the
chemistry.
movie with Samuel L. Jackson about the they have like a car accident? Was he in that one? I don't remember at this point. Must
I
have been
don't
someone
think so.
else. Can't remember at this point.
I'm not sure. Yeah. You've
Yeah,
seen a lot of movies.
I
You
have, so I
remember
need
a
to
lot.
try to remember what that one is. All right, so now we will play one of the two games. So I'm once again going to let you choose which one you would rather watch. Which one you'd rather play first? Which one you
Last
want to
time
play
we
first
started
and
with,
watch? We're talking about movies.
let's play high-low first. And I'm going to say 93% every time, because at least once I'll be right.
Right, let's spin the wheel and see what we get.
It's crazy weird. No whammies.
All right, the 2013 film that should have won Best Picture, Gravity.
Okay, I feel like 93% is fair. I'm gonna say 92% just because that movie's fantastic. I feel like that's gonna have a good IMDb too. I'm gonna say 8.4.
All right. Well, you were closer with the
I'm so generous with all of
you were
these.
definitely much closer with the Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes is 96.
Wow. All right. I'm not mad about
And
my
IMDb is
guess.
only 7.7. Yeah, I don't
What?
know why that's so low.
Snobs.
I think that's an amazing movie. I was as
Yes.
good as 12 Years a Slave is, I don't think it's a better movie.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. And I love tension in a movie. I love it when it makes me almost sick to my stomach. And gravity does that for almost all of it.
Well, 12 Years a Slave has a lower ranking, lower rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Interesting. But it is higher on IMDb. Okay.
Yeah, I
So
guess. I get
let's
that.
spin the wheel for the next one. Right, the 2009 film A Serious Man.
All right, I need to not be so generous every time. I'm going to say this one's 83%. And I am going to say it is 7.5 on IMDb. I'm probably way off.
You never know. You might be a lot closer than you think. It is a 7 on IMDb. And it has an 89%
All right.
on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow. All right. I'm not mad about my guesses because they were
That's
guesses. They were at least somewhere
true.
in the
That's
universe.
true. All right, let's spin the wheel.
I'm finding that IMDb is much harsher
Yes.
than Rotten
Yes.
Tomatoes, which that shouldn't be so
Exactly.
surprising, I
That's
guess.
not a surprise at all. All right, let's
No.
spin the wheel for the last one. Today on High Low. Right, the 1959 film The Nun's Story.
All right, I've never seen it, so this is just going to be a big old guess. Let's go somewhere in the middle since I don't have a clue. Rotten Tomatoes, we're going to go 81%. And IMDb, we're going to go 7.6.
Okay, very close. It's seven.
I
There you
said
go,
that with
7.5
confidence.
and 85%. That's great. Impressive.
Ha! I do better when I haven't seen the movie. That's hilarious.
Well, you are talented, Heather. What can I tell you? We know that.
Thank you. I'm very good at guessing. My educated guesses are not so
Well,
consistent.
that's part of the
My shots in the dark. Awesome.
All right, and now we will play the second game today. Name that book adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get for this one today.
I like this one. I haven't been doing very good at it, but I like that it's challenging and it's interesting. This one is cool.
Okay, this is
It does peeve me a little that I read as much as I do.
this is based on a novel from tw based on a movie that came out in 2018. And the original name of the novel was Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda.
What? Versus the Homo sapiens agenda? Okay, so science fiction?
No, it's not. No.
Maybe?
It's a rom-com.
Oh. I didn't even know they still made rom-coms. They should stop. We should just go back to the 80s and 90s where they were great. I don't, please hint. Yes,
Hint.
hint.
Okay, let's see what type of hint I can give you here. It is directed by Greg Berlanti, and it stars Nick Robinson, Jennifer Garner, and Josh Duhamel.
Oh, is this the 13 going on 30? Oh, I think that was earlier. 20, no, that's Katherine Heigl. God, I'm gonna start naming all the ones I know, and there's Jennifer Garner. I like her, but she does do a lot of those rom-coms, and I don't like them. It's my least favorite genre. Did you say Mark Ruffalo? No, you said Josh Duhamel. Oh, wait a minute. I think I might have seen this. Or maybe I'm thinking of one with Katherine Heigl. The two of them are so interchangeable with these films. Okay, I don't know.
It's called Love, Simon.
Nope, no idea.
The IMDb synopsis is Simon Spear keeps a huge secret from his family, his friends, and all of his classmates. He's gay. When that secret is threatened, Simon must face everyone and come to terms with his identity.
Okay. No. Yep. I'm not gonna be watching that. Mostly because it's a rom-com. That's really it.
Well, it's one of those rom-coms, I guess, with a message, type of thing.
That's fine too. I'm just still not interested in them. They're usually supposed to be funny and they're not.
No, this one isn't. I wouldn't call it really that funny. It's more on the serious
Yeah.
level than the funny one. But okay,
It sounds like.
all right, that's right. So, Heather, would you like to once again tell everyone where they can find Heather Baxendale?
You can find all of my goodies on heatherbaxendale.com. My books are there. They're a good time, and they're not rom-coms. They're action adventure, science fiction, fantasy, and they're fun. You can find my podcast there, Word of Hellmouth, where Mark and I, my good friend, we do a Buffy rewatch show. We are currently on season 4 of Buffy and season 1 of Angel. Check it out. It is a good time. Even if you haven't seen the show, there are people that, or you haven't listened to the show. No, you haven't seen the show. If you haven't seen Buffy, there are people that haven't watched the show and they still listen to our podcast. I don't, it's crazy, but it happens. You can also find all of my social media on there. Give me a follow if you'd like. I am mostly on Instagram. I'm not really on any of the other platforms.
Okay. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for a movie I'm in. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website, movierminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierminute@movierob.net. So, Heather, you want to come back tomorrow to find out how Boggs is going to actually react to this type of intellectual conversation with Andy?
Yes, I do. I'm so excited.
All right, so until tomorrow, get busy living.
Get busy dying!